please the court. I'm Steve Olson. I represent Gary's Implement. Bridgeport Tractor Parts failed in its burden to establish its sustained lost profits from the actions of my client. Failed to establish with reasonable certitude or exactness the extent of those lost profits. For that reason, we ask that this court vacate and reverse the verdict and judgment in favor of Bridgeport Tractor Parts. The expert for Bridgeport testified as to two of three different models to establish lost profits. The first was a yardstick method. That method, he basically took Bridgeport and compared it with two other businesses that David Dyke owned, that Allstate's Tractor Parts owned. Those two businesses were existing businesses that he had bought. He had bought the entire businesses as opposed to Bridgeport, where he just bought the salvage parts business. The comparison to the two businesses were Wisconsin businesses. They were located in areas in Wisconsin where there were 3 to 4 times the potential customers as there were in Bridgeport. Everybody acknowledged that with one of those businesses, Wisconsin Tractor Parts, they had higher sales by 20% than what Bridgeport had. The other one, Downing Tractor Parts, had sales of 2 to 3 times what Bridgeport Tractor Parts had. The economies in Wisconsin and Nebraska were different. The owner, David Dyke, testified that the economy would not be a strong part.
Did the expert factor in or adjust for the sizes or the gross sales or anything like that?
Not at all. He said when he got done, all those different things balanced out. And he didn't include a discussion about the difference in sales, the difference in potential of customers, the economies of Wisconsin versus Nebraska, the management team, the employees, the different farming that happens in Wisconsin versus Nebraska. None of those things. He got to the bottom and said all those things wash out. So basically what he does is he takes the cash flow statement from Bridgeport, puts it next to the cash flow statement for Wisconsin Tractor Parts and Downing, and says if there's a difference in 1999, that's a loss. Same thing for 2000, all the way up to 2007. Even though the contracts in this case said the non-compete ends in 2003. Never explained in his testimony one place why he went to 2007. Never indicated that...
Did you ask him on cross-examination?
The issue came up with regard to 1999 to 2007. There was no indication that losses existed beyond 2003. In fact, the owner's son, John Dyke, testified that in his own calculations, he was concerned about going on beyond the time of the non-compete of 2003, and that came out in cross-examination. In fact, in his memo that he sent to the expert, he says, the time period covered by my comparison does not directly correspond to the no-compete.
Is that the memo where he estimated their loss at $1.6 million?
I'm sorry.
Is that the same email, wasn't it, that he estimated they could have estimated their loss at something like $1.6 million?
Absolutely. And in fact, the same memo or email where he said there are some significant legitimate criticisms to my calculations. And one of them, the very first one, was there was a difference in sales between the Wisconsin stores and Bridgeport.
So is your assignment the expert wasn't qualified, or that he didn't have the foundation to make the opinion?
He didn't have the foundation, but he didn't go upon the calculation properly. He never included anything like expenses. He never included anything like overhead. All he did is said, okay, I've got three methods. The first one, the before and after, doesn't work, so I'm going to rely on this yardstick. And he was fed information on two other companies, and it was easy for him to take a look at these two other companies and not consider any of the characteristics of those companies. That's absolutely contrary to the rulings of this court, for example, the Nevada Bob's case, where the court did not allow a comparison to Nevada Bob's store in the mall versus another location in the same city. And here we've got an expert who's trying to compare locations in Nebraska versus Wisconsin. Then he went further and calculated those losses beyond the time of the non-compete without establishing that there was any reason to do that. And that's where the jury and the jury instruction became confusing. And obviously from this verdict, the jury adopted what the economist had to say, or what Mr. Wanamese had to say with regard to the losses. He then goes on to say that, okay, I used the third method, and that was the but-for method. And again, all he did is he took some testimony saying that Bridgeport had $1 million in sales the year before this contract. That would have been back in 1977 or 1997. And these companies in Nebraska and Wisconsin seem to have grown at somewhere between 5 and 10%. So I'm going to now go and say, I'm going to take that $1 million over here with Bridgeport, and I'm going to grow that each year by that figure of 5 to 10%, and again compare the two cash flows. Never once making any indication about expenses or overhead. Again, that's absolutely contrary to the cases this court has decided.
What was the extent of the cross-examination of this testimony?
In terms of the methodology, there was extensive cross-examination with regard to the fact that all he did is looked at projections and cash flow. He never once had and never testified on direct examination that he had documents that would have shown what specifically he was comparing or what he did to take into account the difference in locations, the difference in sales, the difference in overhead.
Were these things you just outlined presented in front of the jury?
There were, absolutely.
And then what objections did you make to all of this?
There were foundations. His testimony was riddled with foundational objections. We had objections, we had bench conferences, all over the same issues. And in fact, the court indicated in a bench conference that the court was concerned about making this leap that Wanandi was trying to make. So it was a difficult examination. You get further when you talk about the fact that Bridgeport's operation after the purchase, they had 4 managers in 2.5 years. They lost all their employees at one point in time. So all these things were brought in cross-examination and yet not considered at all by Mr. Wanandi. In the but-for approach, the Home Pride Foods case tells us that you have to look at expenses. You have to look at overhead. And not once did he do that. Instead, what he did is take out and say, well, I'm going to look at cash flow. Well, cash flow for a large operation obviously is going to be different than for a smaller operation. You've got over here, you've got cash flow from sales, from financing, from investment. Over here, you got cash flow from smaller sales. So obviously, that's going to be different. There absolutely was no reasonable proof, reasonable certitude or exactness with regard to operations. So you get beyond that and you wonder, well, how come he didn't use the before and after approach? It's easy. The testimony was over here, he thought he had $1 million in sales before. He could have used the very first year that Bridgeport Tractor had this business, which was 1999. The testimony from our expert was the sales that year were $835,000. And yet Wanandi said he didn't want to take that approach because there was not a good before and after. Well, it's obvious he wanted to use approaches and comparisons that he thought would inflate those damages, and that's exactly what he did. And I want to spend just a second, if I could, on the issue of the restitution. This property, the real estate that this business in Bridgeport was located on, was owned by David Dyke. He transferred it at one point in time to Bridgeport Tractor Parts. They filed bankruptcy to get away from collection efforts on our judgment. The bankruptcy court dismissed that action, finding it was filed in bad faith. A trustee sale took place. Mr. Dyke bought the property, paid for that property. So if anybody has the standing to ask restitution for the return of that, purchase price is Mr. Dyke and not Bridgeport Tractor Parts. There's another action pending with regard to that same issue, and we submit that it's not appropriate for this court to make the decision with regard to that issue. We have the issue also of the fact that Bridgeport Tractor Parts comes to court with unclean hands and should not recover in equity, which is what restitution is. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Domina, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Dave Domina. I'm here on behalf of Bridgeport Tractor Parts. The appellant's position here asks this court to review a ruling of the trial court admitting expert evidence. Your cases teach that the standard for that review is whether the trial court abused his discretion. The trial court was presented with an expert witness who was qualified. His qualifications were not challenged in a Schaeffersman hearing or otherwise. His methodology was attacked, and attacked with effective cross-examination at trial, and his direct examination was punctuated with objections, some of which were sustained, requiring that additional foundation was laid until the trial court was satisfied that there was sufficient foundation and made a decision based on a quality record to admit the evidence. The issue was whether the seller of a business competed unfairly with a buyer in two distinct ways. And I think it's important to dwell for just a moment on those two different methods of alleged inappropriate competition. The businesses involved here first accumulate inventory through methods of acquisition that involve farmers bringing in old machinery, going to old machinery auctions and sales, and having people out in the countryside scouring to buy old tractors and other implements so they can be salvaged and an inventory of parts can be obtained. There's no other way to get a base from which sales can be made. So a very important part of the business is to be able to buy goods, and an important part of locking out the seller as a competitor was to keep the seller out of the business of buying up the available inventory. That was the first competition sought to be eliminated in the contract. The second, of course, was then once an inventory might have been gathered by the seller to prevent the seller from selling it at retail. Both events occurred, we contended, inappropriately here, and the jury agreed. Mr. Winande, the accountant and business valuation expert, was asked to assist in determining the extent of damage. According to the defendant's expert witness, he used the three recognized methods for doing that. They're called the simple before and after approach. How was the business doing before and how after? He concluded that approach could not be used because of inadequate data about a prior to sale process. The second approach he used was a strict comparison approach. I find other companies that compare with the one I'm studying. I isolate their similarities, identify their differences, adjust for the two. After adjusting, use the comparison as one of the methods of determining loss.
So there were adjustments in his testimony?
There were, Your Honor, and there were adjustments made in three essential ways. The first way was that he adjusted the gross margin, the adjusted gross margin, downward from 7%, which was the Wisconsin companies operating at a pre-tax margin of 7%, to 5% for this business, thinking that the expenses were higher. So he accommodated the differences in expenses by shrinking the margin. They had more expense, they made less money. The second thing he did was to consider the difference in the sales volume and the number of the customer base and the area, and concluded that while the population was less dense, the area in which there was no competition at Bridgeport was significantly greater in Wisconsin, so the comparison was favorable. He didn't care about whether the crops were different. He's talking about used equipment parts, and those parts are needed whether you use the tractor for wheat or for corn, or for green beans.
Mr. Domina.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does the record reflect, you know, he used two Wisconsin companies, and they happen to be companies owned by him.
Yeah, but owned by my client.
By your client. But does the record reflect whether there were any comparable companies in a closer geographic area in Nebraska, say, that could be used?
It reflects consideration of the question and the conclusion that there were none. There's a reference to a small company at Morrill. There's a passing reference to a used equipment dealer up at Corn Leaf in Platte County. They were not compared. They were not considered to compare favorably because their business models were quite a lot too different and their inventory offerings significantly different. These two in Wisconsin were two of eight owned by my client. And these two were differentiated out from the others primarily, Your Honor, because of their startup time, the duration of their operations, and the nature of the business. That is, the kinds of equipment they were trying to collect and salvage, and then the kinds of parts they were offering for sale. Those factors were all considered. Mr. Gredeke, an accountant called by the defense, gave some interesting admissions on pages 901 through 904 of the Bill of Exceptions in particular, where he concedes the $1 million starting price from which our calculations proceed. He concedes that the methods employed were the appropriate ones to consider. And he doesn't really dispute significantly the adjustment of the 7% down to 5% margin, which accommodates all of the expense side of the balance sheet and the businesses being compared. So we really think that the defense expert went a long way toward fortifying our record and confirming that the trial court did not abuse his discretion in admitting this evidence. The second assigned error brought here, not argued this morning, concerns instruction number 7. It's essentially an NJI instruction. The argument in the brief is that the evidence of loss should not have been permitted to extend beyond the 5-year duration of the contract, and that instruction 7 should have informed the jury that the damages were limited to 5 years. Instruction number 2 refers to the specific 5-year contracts in question by exhibit number, tells the jury they're confined to the evidence, and informs them essentially that the theory of damage here, not saying theory, is to put the buyer in the position that the buyer would have been in without a breach.
I'm sorry, you're saying instruction number 2?
Instruction 2 helps to eliminate any doubt about whether 7 contains an error.
2 is the nature of the case. That the judge tells the jury, here's where we're going.
That's right.
What it's about.
And I might mention that it refers to the contracts in dispute which contain the 5-year duration by specific exhibit number, 270 and 271, I think. May I have just a moment on the cross appeal? The cross appeal is mine. It presents an issue of law. It presents a close question, a question that I thought I needed to raise for you here, and I was uncertain about, and that's why there's another lawsuit pending over the same subject in district court. My client paid $476,000 as a result of a non-execution sale under a deed of trust of a parcel of real estate sold as a part of the transaction that included the sale of this going concern business or inventory and business that we purchased from Gary's. That execution, I'll call it execution, that trustee's sale under the deed of trust occurred because there was a claim of a default under the promissory note that the jury concluded here was void because of Gary's breach. That means my client paid $476,000 under a promissory note that has been declared void. I contend we're entitled to restitution of that money, and that the trial court was confronted with a question of law on that issue, ruled incorrectly, and should be reversed here.
Is that the basis of another same issue on another lawsuit?
Yes, it is. It is, Your Honor, and that subsequent lawsuit was filed to protect the statute of limitations in case I shouldn't be raising it here. And there's a question about whether I should be raising it here, I think primarily because that issue arises under the deed of trust and not under this contract. And that's what I want to alert you about. It's a close question. And I want you to know why I brought it here. If you decide I'm wrong on the cross-appeal...
How was this raised in trial?
It wasn't. It was raised with pretrial motions. one of them in 2006 and another one about 3 months before the trial, with the same result both times.
What would be the mischief if we just said, well, that there's another case on file dealing with this exact same point?
None, Your Honor. That's fine. And in fact, what I was going to say is, if you decide I'm wrong on the cross appeal, I encourage you to be specific with your remand instruction on that point. And that's where I was headed with my remarks.
Does this case have, I want to say, the right pieces of paper to look at it?
The deed of trust is in the record, but there's a really serious question about whether it's right procedurally here. And I was just unsure enough. I didn't want to not bring it to you, but I'm only cautioning about the remand order if you decide against me on the cross appeal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No, he's over.
There is no time for rebuttal. The next case for today is Dolbravone versus Ford Motor Company.